I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mint Climate Change Tracker, a podcast where we talk about the challenges posed by a rapidly heating planet. I'm your host, Vivek Bhattacharya. Folks, for a change, this has been a slow news week when it comes to climate change. But there has been a terrible ecological catastrophe in Assam. In fact, it's still playing out. On 9th June, a massive fire broke out at the Baghjan gas well next to the Dibru-Saikhoa National Park. This well, owned by Oil India Limited, had been leaking gas since a blowout on May 27. After over 10 days of inaction, it caught fire on the 9th, causing widespread devastation. Two firefighters have been killed and the local ecology has been destroyed. This includes the death of rare and endangered gangetic dolphins. 7,000 people have been evacuated. It's a nightmare, and it casts a harsh light on our need to dig for fossil fuels, especially next to a national park. Last week, I'd spoken about the criticism faced by India's Environment Ministry for proposing a coal mine in the Dehing Patkai Elephant Reserve in Assam. Well, there's some good news. Coal mining there has been suspended by Coal India Limited following an outcry. The Guwahati High Court has also taken cognizance of the case. This is what happens when you put pressure and ask for accountability. And that is basically the media's job. Remember, the media functions in public interest. It's the media's job to amplify the needs, worries, problems, and anger of the people, to tell truth to power, and to hold those in power accountable. That's why the media is an essential service. So what are the kind of stories that we in the media should be doing when it comes to the environment and climate change? Let's get deeper into that subject with my guest today. She is Aruna Chandrasekhar, a young independent journalist who has done some excellent reportage on issues related to the environment and climate change in the past few years. Her focus has often been on communities that are on the receiving end of our fossil fuel guzzling lifestyle. Aruna has won many awards for her journalism, including the Red Ink in 2018 and the Trace Prize for Investigative Reporting in 2019. She is currently pursuing a Master of Science in Environmental Change and Management at the University of Oxford as a Sheevening Scholar. Hi, Aruna. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Vivek. Thank you for having me on. You're a huge fan of Mint Climate Tracker, and it helps keep track of everything that I've caught up on or not or missed out on in the week on climate. And it's a great pleasure to be here.
Thanks a lot for that, Aruna. Now, what I wanted to ask you first is that, given your experience in the field, how much importance do you feel does climate change as a subject receive in the Indian media?
I don't think it receives nearly enough attention as it should, considering most of the impacts that we're looking at.
Right.
A lot of which we are already seeing. I'm not the kind that looks at extreme weather events and attributes all of it to climate change. There is definitely a much stronger need for attribution. But there are weather-related and climate-related events that are ongoing, from droughts to floods to cyclones, increasing in intensity. All of these are issues that affect millions of people. And if that's not on the front page, and if you're not issuing warnings or storm warnings in time, then media is failing to perform its informative function.
Right.
And I see not enough of that on being mainstreamed at all.
Like a lot of your journalism involves around looking at the social costs of environmental degradation and things like that, and how that kind of feeds into, say, climate resilience, especially for the poor and the marginalized sections of society. So is there a way that media can do its job better in that regard in this country?
On one level, we do not have news organizations that have specific climate beats, right? If you're looking at places and looking at outlets globally, you've got all of your different news outlets that have specific people covering or being a climate correspondent. And which is a luxury. But even the environment reporters, if you do look around, that they're asked to do a bunch of different functions as well. That is, if they do still have jobs in this media climate, whether it is to report on corruption, on elections, on corona, but without a lens looking towards environment. The thing is that, I mean, at least for the papers or for the outlets that do choose to focus on this as an issue, they seem to be either spread pretty thin and try to deploy reporters on to looking at different beats, which I can understand, but then that really does leave you a little time to report. And a large bulk of this reporting is often done by freelancers, which is interesting because we bring our own perspective and what we can see. But then looking at impacts takes a budget. You have to be able to go and report on the field. You have to get there in time and have access. That's one element of the picture. The other element is like it depends on which part of the puzzle are you looking at. The thing with climate is that, I mean, there are as many different factors, whether you're looking at traffic emissions or whether you're looking at industry and the fossil fuel industry specifically, or looking at an energy transition and what that could look like. There are as many different angles to pitch, but also for papers to not shy away from coverage because of just the breadth of things that it covers in daily human life.
What I want to ask you is, what are the kind of stories do you feel that need to be told? What are the kind of stories that you'd like to see in the media or what you'd like to do?
One is heat. And looking at this new heat report, which projects mass migration that is likely to happen, that is looking at temperatures, especially in the subcontinent, breaching levels. And what does that mean? And I'm concerned of this, especially when we're looking at, for instance, with the with migrants on the march, workers on the march, and being brutalized, of course, by police and state forces. But the idea of how is it, and that's something I've been concerned about, is how are workers going to be able to work in temperatures like that, or going that above the mid-40s? Or how is industry going to be able to deal with, look at this in terms of guaranteeing labor safety, or how is the future of work going to change, especially considering the large number of people that it will affect? I am interested in, of course, looking at things around issues between forecasting and communicating risk when there are fast forming cyclones. How do you get the word out as quickly as possible, but at the same time create resilience within a community? And these are things that, of course, the media can help right. and play a strong role in, whether it's
right.
risk communications of giving people a heads up on what. And, of course, I mean, some people talk about it like it's a different beat altogether, which is solutions journalism. But what could resilient cities look like? And the word resilience is one that I don't particularly like, because often it's something that development agencies sort of use to say that, yes, the poor will cope with it. What are those difficult choices, like in some places, whether looking at sea level rise, for instance, large parts of Bombay look to be inundated by 2050. Now, what does that mean for cities with millions of people, and how is that something that you can possibly adapt to? Those are questions that would be interesting around or stories for the media to explore in terms of what does climate resilient infrastructure look like? What are we thinking in terms of long-term growth versus things like sea level rise and future of work and heat?
So right now you are pursuing an MSc in Environmental Change and Management at the University of Oxford. So tell me a little about the work that you've done so far.
So I started reporting and traveling with people's movements and trying to write stories. And it's always difficult, your first couple of pitches, you never know where they'll go. Primarily for the first few years of my work, it was looking at communities working and living around mining areas. And that was a large part of the puzzle. Communities who have a far better working knowledge of the constitution, but there's also their knowledges which we don't seem to accommodate, and which is actually useful for us to navigate our paths of the future. And I started reporting on air pollution, but not just the idea was to keep doing a series of looking at different point sources, and ordinary people taking on extraordinary polluters, but like different sources, whether it's crop burning in Punjab, but looking at systemic issues with agriculture, kind of connecting some of those dots around that to the energy puzzle, to looking at how cities deal with waste, and frontline sanitation workers who I don't know whether they're getting paid in the lockdown or not, but who are our frontline environmental workers. So it kind of also crisscrossing this place between data, between perception and power and agency. And all of these different pieces of the climate puzzle. I started also reporting on climate impacts as time went, especially during the Kerala floods. I went out to try and understand various different elements of it. Like, for instance, why is it that states how are they going to be able to deal with the lack of relief funding? And how is it skewed? What are those policies? But at the same time, was the event caused by climate change or not? Was extreme rainfall the issue, or was it governance? So that was a question which stuck with me in terms of, can we attribute this to climate change? And what does it actually take? So that's when I reached out to the World Wide Weather Attribution Project, which has Freddie Otto, who's also an IPCC scientist, but this year I was lucky to have her as my professor, and looking at climate models, trying to understand forecasting, and what is it in terms of what are the politics of weather prediction. With really heavy rainfall in Mumbai last year, I was called onto a program, and ministers were even starting to use words like, okay, this is climate change. But the idea that sometimes this can be a fig leaf for policymakers to hide behind rather than assume any accountability. My journey has sort of brought me from a point of looking at point sources, but also people, resistance movements, impacts, as well as trying to figure out what is that roadmap going to look like. And I think that that's something that it's important that as journalists and in the media that we start articulating that, because as we know that policymakers won't. What can we put forward? What can we interrogate? What are the decisions that need to be made collectively? And I think for these reasons, I think a better grounding in what climate change is, and the fact that it touches almost every single part of public life is vital. And I think exploring it from our own lenses in terms of how heavily we're getting impacted, and looking at how this has always been both pointed out, as well as you have communities who have adapted to issues and disasters before, and that there is a wealth to learn from, but also that we need to get our act together as quickly as possible, because this, unlike it won't wait, and we're seeing this play out in real time. And the West can have enough time to talk about net zero until 2050. That's time that we as journalists do not have.
Thank you, Karuna. That was really an excellent conversation. And I personally learned a lot from that. Thanks a lot for joining us. And all the best for your future endeavors.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It really means a lot. And to be part of a community of great reporters who have already covering so much breadth and ground, that it's a breath of fresh air. That it only gives you hope that there's more that's actually happening.
That was journalist Aruna Chandrasekhar speaking about the kind of stories around climate change that she would like to see in the Indian media. That's it from me today. Join me next week as I speak to a special guest and also bring you up to speed with news of the climate crisis. Follow this podcast and my column in Mint Lounge on Twitter with the hashtag MintClimateTracker. Follow HT Smartcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the handle HT Smartcast. We'd love to hear from you, so write to us at podcasts@hindustantimes.com. Listen to more podcasts on htsmartcast.com and subscribe to this one on any of your favorite platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Google, and JioSaavn. I am Vivek Bhattacharya, and you've been listening to the Mint Climate Change Tracker. See you all next week, and remember, the climate clock is ticking.
This was a Live Mint production, brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.